Shout Out is a registered charity and we work all across Ireland delivering workshops to young people. We deliver workshops in schools, to teachers, to parents and guardians, youth workers and even workplaces, because eventually you'll end up working there too, and we want those to be inclusive spaces for you.
For 10 years now, since 2012, we've been delivering workshops in secondary schools across the island of Ireland to tackle LGBTQ plus bullying. And we've done over 2,000 student workshops over the past 8 school years, speaking directly to over 60,000 students.
In Shout Out, we use our on-the-ground experience of speaking with young people to inform all of our training modules, which we also deliver to teachers, parents, guardians, social workers, youth workers, and in workplaces.
If you believe in inclusion through education and you want to learn more, book a workshop for your school or for staff, and you can learn more at www.shoutout.ie.
Hi, you're listening to Shout Out, Listen In.
Shout Out, Listen In.
Shout Out, Listen In.
Tátú Geistochla, Shout Out, Listen In.
Shout Out, Listen In.
In both our workshops and on this podcast, members of the LGBTQ plus community share their own personal stories, which can lead to open conversations about both the positive and the negative experiences of being LGBTQ plus. We are aware that these stories can be triggering for people at times, so please be gentle and cautious when listening, and always reach out for help if you feel you need it. Welcome to Shout Out, Listen In. You may recognise my voice from the intro of this podcast, but our regular host, Lisa Nikombrehev, is off getting married. So we're sending her and Mo loads of love. And I'm stepping in this month. My name is Fer Curtis. And I was having to think about who I could bring in. And the first person that came to mind is my guest.
Is it?
It is, yes.
I messaged
Ruan, the director of Shout Out, and said, what do you think of this person? Absolutely, go for it. Perfect person to bring in. I've been dying to get you behind mic for a while now.
Oh my God.
I've just been trying to find the right way to get you in.
That's great, babe.
Padraic Wilson McCarthy, how are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
Later for that little intro as well.
I know. There you go. A little ego boost for you there.
Absolutely, yeah.
No, honestly, I have. I love what you do. I love what you're about. I love your socials. I love Queeriosity. We're going to get into all of this. Mm-hmm. First of all, for people who might know you, tell them a bit about yourself.
Yeah, so as you know, as you just heard, my name is Padraic Wilson McCarthy. Yes. I'm originally from Cork, which will become very obvious as I continue to speak.
I was going to use that in my intro. Yeah. I was going to be like, you'll know exactly where he's from when you hear the accent. But
don't be afraid to tell me to slow down now either. But I've been living up in Dublin now nearly 4 years, actually.
Oh, okay.
Moved up during the pandemic.
Yeah, interesting time to move.
Yeah, interesting time to move. But it was either that or I was going to fall out with my parents at home. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It was too intense.
Do you know, I had a funny one with, because I moved home and I was like, oh, we're going to kill each other.
Yeah.
And we did kill each other. And then by the end of it, I was moving out and I was like, oh, I don't want to go.
Totally.
And I was like, you are in your 30s. Yeah. Leave this house right now.
But it's hard though, isn't it? When you get so used to that. And I think when you move out at the end of a pandemic as well, you're so used to being at home. And it's kind of a comfort thing. But we were killing each other in the nicest way possible. Like we were sitting down, me and my mom were sitting down and watching Drag Race, and we were having a ball, and then someone would be eliminated and we'd have a fight over that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm not
cooking you dinner tonight.
Exactly.
She should have stayed.
That was it. And she was hating on Bianca Del Rio and I was having none of
all
it.
All right, now.
She's no taste.
We need some words with Mrs. Wilson McCarthy.
No taste, class, or decorum. But so I moved up during the pandemic and found it quite difficult actually at the start. Okay. I'd moved back from Australia. I was there for a year. I wasn't home very long and the pandemic happened. And I went from living this free life in Melbourne, having a great time, wanting to come home, to set down roots here, to being in a pandemic and feeling like I was reverting back to being 19 again.
Yeah.
Do you know? So then I was like, no, it's time to go. So I moved to Dublin and I didn't really know anybody up here.
Okay.
And people don't know this, wouldn't realize it, but growing up especially, I was quite shy, and for me to push myself out of my comfort zone is a bit of a struggle or take some effort. So when I was moving up, I was like, no, I'm going to have to spread the wings, you know?
Yeah.
Came up August 2020 thinking, you know, things were starting to get better. We were still having those €7 meals. You know what I mean? We had to sit down in the bars, but we were out and about.
Yeah.
I wasn't up 3 weeks. We were back into a lockdown, you know? And that was tough. That was tough because I was in a new city. Yeah. I had a new job, so I couldn't go home. Fortunately, the people I lived with at the time were grey crack. And we got on like a house on fire. Don't live with them anymore because we've all just moved on, but still very good friends of mine, which is great.
That's and a nice way to settle into the city is actually living with people that you get on with.
And two of the girls, three of the girls especially, I would have been lost without. Okay. And then kind of just like out and about then and just tried my best, you know, especially on the scene, because you know yourself, it can be quite difficult. It can be very difficult to like break into a friendship group in general, but I think sometimes it can be even more difficult in the queer community.
I totally agree. Yeah.
And we pride ourselves in inclusivity and including people and being wide open. That's not always the case. A large proportion of it is, but it's not always the case. But I found it challenging at the start, but actually, as time went on, really easy. Do you know, like people were very open, and you know, you get to know the same faces in the same bars or the same spaces.
Once you find your tribe and the people you can gravitate towards. That's it.
And I did, and I'm very fortunate, and I ended up moving in with a group of gays, and we have a ball.
Let me take you right back to being in Cork, growing up queer. What was that experience like for you? Because obviously with this podcast, we have a lot of younger listeners. It's an education podcast, and we really want to kind of, you know, get loads of visibility and experience out there. So before we jump into your life now, which is so interesting, and we're going to dive into media, into school, that will give you a little bit of a sneak peek to what we're going to. But growing up in Cork as a queer person, you said you were very shy. What was it like for you?
I was shy in ways, and it depended on my environment. You know, when I was in school, I was quite shy, especially in primary school. And I didn't really have hobbies as such. When I was in primary school, and then it was when I kind of hit secondary school age, I started doing drama and dancing and musical theatre.
I should have included in the.
No, babe, because I can't sing, I can't act, or I can't dance. But
Podrick
I showed up.
Is a well-known choir director. I only found out last week.
Yeah, I'm also a choir director. But I'll get into that in a second, right? But a choir director that can't sing. But anyway, I started doing drama, musical theatre, and dancing. And in the stage school that I was in, it was so everyone was in there like five nights a week. It became like a social club, you know. We were like a family. We socialized together. We did everything together. And I still had my friends from school, but then there was a crossover as well. So like, you know, Kevin Toomey is my best friend.
Yes.
We used to go in there every day together, and we'd be in school together, and he's gay as well. But we didn't, like, obviously we didn't, like, we weren't out growing up, you know. We didn't, like, Kevin didn't come out till he was 21. I was maybe 23.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, I was a little bit older. But like, there was also that reassurance that even though we didn't, it was never said, I think we both kind of knew. And if we didn't know for certain about the other person, we knew that the other person would have our backs.
Yes.
And when I got to secondary school, it's mad. I think my coming out experience would have been a lot different if I'd accepted it myself, because actually my parents are very supportive. Again, I came from like a drama background in musical theatre. It's very camp anyway. A lot of the people that I looked up to, the older people that were there, they were gay, you know what I mean? So it wasn't like being gay was taboo. You know, there was members of my family that were gay, but I think it was because I didn't accept it myself that I made this huge deal out of it. And why I suppose I struggled with it so much.
Do you mind me asking why you feel you didn't accept it within yourself, despite all these things? Because I kind of had a similar situation where all the doors were there to just be open and be like, I'm gay. Yeah. But I just, it was, and I always say it was a struggle within me with the perception of how people would. I always knew I was gay. I was fine with it, but the perception of what people might say.
Yeah.
And I feel it was a society thing. What do you feel it was coming out for you or accepting it within yourself? What were those blocks?
Yeah. So like, I did see representation, you know, probably more so than other people, because I was on stage and I was doing shows and this, that and the other. And there was always fabulous gay men around me. And I looked up to them and I kind of said, I'd love to live like that. Like, you know, I'd love to be that free, or like, you know, that confident in myself in ways. And I know they probably had their own struggles too, but that's what I saw as a 15, 16 year old. In my head, it was like, okay, I could do that, but also then I'll never get married, and I'll never have kids, and like, who knows where I'll end up, you know? And I am the last of the McCarthys in the bloodline. And this is mad now, because if I said this to my dad, and I've said it to him loads of times, he's like, you are ridiculous, right? But in my head, I was like, if I don't have a child, if I don't have a son, then that's the end of the family line. Like, that's the McCarthy side wiped out, you know? And when I said this to my dad later, because we very open chats about it, and he actually loves Queeriosity. I know we'll talk about that in a while, but he was like, that's never, he's like, in all of the time that I've, first of all, suspected probably, and second of all, known that you're getting, never entered my head, never entered my head at all. That, you know, that
isn't,
was even
an issue.
Isn't it crazy
the stuff that we put into our heads, and it's reality in our heads.
Absolutely.
Like, for you, it was probably like, that's what they're all thinking now. They're going to be disappointed. Never a factor.
Totally, totally. And I struggled really badly with my mental health, especially when I finished school, because actually my secondary school experience was overall very positive, even though it was, you know, it was, I did my Leaving Cert in 2012. So it was fairly a progressive time, but we weren't quite there yet. But it just so happened, like, I went to a community school in Cork City. It shouldn't have been, but we had this kind of year where there was people from all walks of life, but everyone was kind of sound. There was one or two, you know what I mean, that there'd be a word here or there. But I generally got on with everyone really well, so they kind of just left me alone, do you know? And actually what we've realised since is that out of a year group of around 100, there's, I'd say, between 10 and 15 of us out now.
Okay.
And none of us are really out in school, bar one or two who are like, you know, who were out. But we always kind of had each other's backs, you know what I mean? And in a very close group of friends that I had, out of six, five of us are out. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Now, but we weren't in school, but like that, we had each other's backs and stuff.
You gravitated towards each other.
Yeah. So there was a comfort blanket that I had in secondary school that I'm very aware that loads of people don't experience, especially members of the queer community. And it feels weird when I speak about it, because not a lot of people have that to relate to. It's when I went to college, that's when I really became, that's when I really started to struggle.
Wow, so, okay.
Yeah, and that's, it's funny, because that's usually the time that it's the opposite.
Yeah.
I suppose I was coming to realise, you know, that I was gay, and, you know, in my head growing up, I was like, yeah, I could be, but I mightn't be, and I will be able to fight it. And then as time went on, I realised that I probably can't fight it. Mm-hmm. But also I found, I went to Mary Eye in Limerick, and I didn't expect to get the points that I did. And I didn't expect to have to move. I was going to go, in my head, I was going to go to UCC with the rest of my friends, and we were going to have a great time.
Yeah.
And the next thing, my CEO, you know, they say, put down, you know, even if you don't think you'll get it, put it down. Don't do that. Make sure it's what you want. You know what I mean? And then I found, you know, within a week, I moved to Limerick. I was in a situation where I was taken out of my comfort zone. I didn't know anyone. Nobody knew me. You know, I walked into there the first day and I knew one girl through friends, but that was it, you know? And I found that really difficult. So
you lost, like, your crutches, I suppose.
I lost my crutches, and I lost my confidence again. And I spent a lot of time, like, traveling the road up and down. I couldn't stay up there overnight. My anxiety was really bad. I was diagnosed with depression.
Wow.
And I was on medication for quite a lot of it as well.
Oh my God, Patrick, I just never knew this about you.
Yeah, not a lot of people don't, actually. Yeah. And I've spoken about it before, and I'm very open, and I don't mind speaking about it. I've spoken about my mental health, and fortunately, I'm in a very good place now, and I have been for quite a while, and I'm off meds and stuff. But when I think back, I'm like, if I just said it, if I was just out and if I was just direct with everyone, it would have made my life easier, it would have made my parents' life easier, and I think my direction would have changed. But it's funny, there's this one story that I've told before, and it's, I was driving up to Limerick on a Monday morning. Couldn't go up on the Sunday night, it was just too much for me. I wanted to be at home, again, comfort. And I was listening to the radio, and which I love the radio, and there was a Dream Expert on, and you could text in. So I pulled in to get fuel, and I text in, and I was like, I'm having this reoccurring dream all the time, right? And it was so vivid, Ferg, right? I was at a removal of someone young that passed away, right? Who had actually passed away in real life, and I was at their removal in real life, and the dream was so vivid because everything was the exact same, except, you know, in an Irish removal, you go up to the top and you shake hands and whatever. Mm-hmm. I vomit everywhere, right, in the dream. I just projectile everywhere. I'm projecting on his family, I'm projecting on the walls, everywhere, and then I run out of there, and I've had this dream reoccurring, and it's so weird because even though I knew this person, I wouldn't have been very close with them, but I would have had to go to the removal, right? So I text in and I detail the dream, and they call the dream out, and then the dream expert goes on and on and on and on about it, and they're like, you're holding a secret, you're holding something back. like there's something in you that you're not sharing, and that's what it is. It's something inside you that you need to get out, but you haven't said it or you haven't admitted to yourself. And in my head, I was like, oh my God. I'm like, I'm panicking. I'm like, are they going to be able to identify me? Do they know, do they put my name in that text? Are they going to read out my name? Because I'm like, I'm going to be outed here now. But once I sat back into it that day, I was like, okay, something has to change. Mm-hmm. This is like the turning point for me where I'm like, I'm going to have to come out. Do you know?
Wow.
Yeah. So it was that actually was kind of like the start of it.
Okay. And how, what were your first steps in coming out? Like, was it family first? Was it friends first? Was it strangers first?
It was friends first.
Yeah.
It was friends first. I downloaded a Grindr for a look. You know what I mean?
But like, just a little goo.
Just to be like, what's
get
the
landscape?
Just like, it's gonna like, I wouldn't reply to anyone. I wouldn't message anyone. I didn't have a picture up. But like, I was like, this is like something that I've heard that people do. Mm-hmm. And like, just like, I wonder, do I know anyone on it? You know, that kind of way.
And just to note, you were 19, 20 at this point.
Yeah,
so we're
totally
a bit older.
Yeah, totally. And then I'd say older, actually, probably 21 maybe.
Okay.
Because up until that, I wouldn't have done anything like that because I would have confirmed in my head that I was.
Yes.
And I was doing everything in my head to ignore that fact, you know? Yeah. And then like that, I spoke about Kevin there. We had this moment. So I kind of knew about Kevin. I kind of had it in my head. It was pretty obvious because he was even more camp than I was. And in a way, I suppose he was like my beard because everywhere we went, he was the gay one, right?
Yeah.
And he was kind of getting ready to move off to go to college in London and that kind of thing. And we were out one night over Christmas and he had told himself that he wasn't going to go into the new year without telling me.
Okay.
So we got a taxi home and my house is on the way. And it's lashing raining, right? And he's being weird in the back of the taxi.
Start the rom-com,
maybe. Yeah, totally, right? You would think, but it doesn't end. There's no fancy ending, right? But like, I suppose, like he was, I was like, you're being really weird and it's kind of annoying me, like, you know, like, whatever. But he was just like, I could see him kind of panicking and I was like, you're just being weirdo, but like, I didn't think I'd notice. So I'm getting out of the car and then he stopped, the car is about to take off and it stops again and he gets out and he tells me and he literally just turns around and he's like, look, I'm gay. And I was like, I think I am too. Like that was it. I think I am too. And he's like, what? And then he came into my house. Like he was meant to go home. He came into my house and we sat down and we just chatted through everything. And he was like, yeah, like he just told me like, look, it's the time for me to come out now. You know, I'm going to tell my family. I want my close friends to know first. That was fine. And I was like, look, I don't think I'm there yet. But like now that it was the first time I've ever said, I didn't say the word, but I think I said, I think I am too. And it was the first time that I said it out loud. And it was just, I got this rush in me that I've never felt before of like, oh my God, like it was like an excitement. It was a like nerves,
yeah,
but excitement as
the
well. It was the heart pounding. It was like, oh my God, like I can't, it was like disbelief that it actually had come out of my mouth because I'd spent so long harboring the secret. And it was a couple of months after that before I could say it to anyone else. Told my mom first. She was traumatized. But she wasn't traumatized that I was gay at all. She was traumatized because I was so upset about it. You know, because I was telling her and I was so upset. And she was like, I don't care. You know, and she was like, I didn't have a clue. But like, she was like, it's fine. Look, it'll be okay. And then I speak to my cousins afterwards and they're like, she's been asking us for years. Like, she knew. She's a liar, you know. And I was so afraid to tell my dad. It actually was a full year afterwards because it was the following Christmas. I was like, I'm not going into the new year now without telling my dad. And one morning, I couldn't sleep at all that night because I knew I had to do it the next day. And I could hear him walking on the landing. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning during the Christmas holidays. And I called him in and I was like, can I talk to you? And he was like, what? And he, to this day, he's like, I thought you were going to tell me that someone was pregnant. I thought you were going to tell me that you got someone pregnant because he didn't have a clue. Like, he really didn't like. And he sat down in the bed and I was like, I told him, I was like, I'm gay. And he's like, okay, I'm going back to bed. So he went back to bed. Within 3 minutes, he was back in. He was like, come on, let's go. We're going for breakfast. So I got up, went for a walk, talked through it. And he was just like, you know, are you losing any friends? I was like, no, like all my friends are really supportive. He's like, is anyone, like, have you been bullied about this? And I didn't know. And I was like, no. And he's like, okay, grand. Because he's back in my day, you would have been. But as long as no one's hurting you, I'm okay with it. And since then, he's one of my biggest allies.
Sometimes
supports.
I know the climate is different. I'm even a little bit older than you and the climate is different. But I think a big thing for me was accepting that my parents were just scared.
Yeah.
Because when they were growing up, the climate was completely different. And actually, I don't think my parents ever had a problem with it. They were just terrified for the experience I was going to have.
The exact same as me. My parents, there's not a homophobic bone in their body, but they had this, they had so much fear that I was going to get beaten up, that I was going to, like, you know, that I wouldn't get a job, or that, you know, I'd lose my friends, because a load of my friends were girls, and my dad thought I was a stud, like, you know what I mean? He thought I was just like hanging, all these girls were hanging off me, but they were my hags, like, you know what I mean? Like, he just couldn't grasp it. And then, like, you know, I know he spoke to my cousins and stuff afterwards, and like, they all reassured him, and they're like, no, like, it's not like that anymore. And like, because, you know, there's only so much that I could say. My sister was a huge support, and like, really took the time to explain stuff to him as well that he didn't understand. And like, the growth that he's shown over time is insane. You know, insane. Like, you know, even like down to like asking me about pronouns, you know, and I'm like, where did you even hear these things? And he's just like really trying to make a conscious effort.
His ears are pricked, and he's listening for how he can improve.
Exactly. You know what I mean? And that's all you would ask. And I was hoping to touch about off that later on, about, you know, older people, particularly in work and stuff, who might have a fear around, you know, getting things wrong.
I think go there now, if since it's come
up. So like, I was just thinking about, you know, for younger people especially, you know, like, you know, and thankfully people are being brave enough, especially people from the non-binary community, to be more visible, you know, and sharing pronouns and stuff. From my own experience of working in schools, you know, I do see a change and a shift in that, you know, people feel like they can express themselves younger now. You know, when I was in school, it wouldn't have been heard of, but there are children in primary schools around this country that are, you know, non-binary and are using they, them pronouns. And it's difficult for older members of staff in particular, but even for people my age, to get used to doing that, to using those pronouns. And one day there was a conversation about it in a place that I, not in the place that I worked now, but in a place where I worked, and someone rubbished the idea of it. And I was, and you know, there was a bit of to and fro, and some people were saying, you can't rubbish the idea, like, you know, and they were like, no, it's nonsense. And I spoke to them afterwards as the only openly gay member of staff.
Okay.
And I was like,
can I just jump here and say, you are a primary school teacher as well, which we're going to touch on, but I don't think we've said it yet.
Yeah. And I spoke to them about it afterwards, because I was like, I just wanted to get, you know, what is it that's preventing you from just saying they, them, instead of he, she, him, her, whatever. And what I realized afterwards, it was, they were so afraid of getting it wrong and being accused of not making an effort, that they were nonsensing it, or saying, no, they didn't want to make the effort because they were afraid that if they did and they messed it up, that they would get themselves in trouble.
Yeah.
Do you know? So they were actually avoiding it. So I think as younger people, we've got an opportunity to not get offended if someone makes a genuine error.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Particularly in places of work.
I think that's so important to bring up, because I think we're all at different points in our lives. We're all getting information at different points of our lives. And I'm the believer that we're all getting the same information. We all do need to take it on, learn from it, grow from it, figure it all out. But we have to give grace for how we've learned, from how we've grown up. And I think that that's amazing that, like, obviously you went up to this person and you just said, let's have a chat about this. And that's always my main piece of advice, is just approach someone and say, listen, human to human, can we just have a chat?
Yeah.
Don't go in all guns blazing.
And always listen. Listen first.
Always listen.
If you find yourself in a position where you have to have these conversations with people, listen to them first and then afterwards explain. Because I feel like if you go in and you try and change someone's point of view, and you don't allow them to speak first, they're going to take it as an attack. And that's what we
And they're
going to
put the walls up further. Exactly. And bury down into what they think they believe.
Yeah.
Totally. Tell us a little bit about being a teacher, how you decided, I suppose, to go into being a teacher. And if you don't mind discussing being a queer man, I never even asked your pronouns. What are your pronouns?
He, him.
Yeah. So being a queer man, what was that experience? Maybe studying also going into the workplace.
Sure. So I've been teaching 9 years now. 8, 9 years, something like that. I'm going to forget after a while. Why I went into it, I don't know why I went into it. I always fancied the idea of it. It seemed like lots of fun. You know what I mean? It seemed like, you know, like no 2 days were going to be the same. And I suppose you don't know about the paperwork and all the stress that comes with it at the time. Yeah. But like, I mean, I'd be lying if I said the holidays weren't a bonus, right? Of course. And no one says it, but like it is, you know?
And you also think like, because I've played with the idea in the past, yeah, going, you also think about playing teacher when you're younger. You're like, that'd be great.
Well, this is it. Love this. This is it, exactly, you know? And you kind of, this kind of like nostalgic feel that, you know, it's kind of like your childhood, but like in a different way. And like, you know, like you can make a difference and those kind of things. But I never really expected that I was going to get it. Like, I looked at, like, studying abroad for a while. I looked at, like, going through, like, you know, social science in UCC and then going and then suddenly I found myself that I'd gotten the points. And I didn't expect it at all, because I wasn't, like, the most studious in school, like, right? But I did quite well, and that was great, and it was a huge boost. But then, as I said already, I found myself having to move to Limerick, and I was suddenly in Mary Eye. Now, Mary Immaculate College is essentially a convent, right? Mm-hmm. It is an immaculate facility. Like, it is top. It's like the training and the education that you get there is incredible. But every time you're on the way to a lecture, you're passing the chapel, and you know, you're required to do a certificate in religious education if you want to be employed by 97.5% of schools in the country. So like, there's this element of, even though, you know, you're learning about, you know, different strategies, inclusion, diversity, like that is a huge part of what you're learning. You're going from there into a lecture where, oh, the lecture isn't there, so this week they said to go to mass instead, you know?
Yeah.
And those kind of things, I found myself in this awful position where I didn't really know where I fit in there, you know, as a result of that. And a lot of people say, if you're a primary school teacher, it's either gay or ga, you know what I mean? And I found myself in a year where it was all ga, you know?
Okay.
And there was a time where I think I was one of maybe three only openly gay people in the year. And like that, like, even though I knew that they were there, we weren't really friends. We didn't like mix. We weren't in the same lectures and stuff. So even though I had a great unit of friends there and a huge support, I hated every single moment of it.
Has to come from the top.
Yes.
That's what I say, is you might be supported on your same level, but the top have to be inclusive in without order to make
a doubt.
The people below them be like, okay, cool, I'm welcome
without
here.
Without a doubt. And I suppose in a way, it's part of their tradition. I don't blame them for it. But also, if you look at the schools, particularly back then, it's changing slowly, but most of the schools in our country are under Catholic patronage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you go and you do a interview to be a primary school teacher, it's quite likely that the parish priest is going to be on the board.
Wow.
Yeah. And up until 2015, 2016, you could have been let go from your job if you were openly gay. If they felt like that was it. There was a.
It just feels so recent, doesn't
it? It is, but it's only, it's less than 10 years ago. Yeah. So when I finished college in 2016 and I was out teaching for the first time, that was the year where it was changed, you know?
Wow.
And it did feel, to me, that if I was going in to an interview, and I know that it's done based off points, and I got 35 and someone else got 35, let's just say, I don't know how much it is. If I was up against a straight man, it just kind of felt like they were going to get it over me anyway. Do you know? I have been very fortunate, actually, in, you know, any school that I've wanted to work in, I've been fortunate to get the job. And in all of them, I've worked in Cork. I've worked in two different schools in Cork. I absolutely loved it. They were brilliant. The staff were amazing in both of them. They were Catholic schools, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They did confirmation, they did communion, but it was a really supportive environment. And I'm very fortunate for that. I felt really comfortable to be out there in both of those schools.
Comfortable amongst the staff, amongst the parents, amongst the kids, everyone, or was there different levels of it?
When it comes to it, once you know the staff and your boss, your principal have your back, well, then no one else has a leg to stand on, really.
It goes back to,
exactly,
when the top have your back,
exactly,
you can,
exactly,
hold your own.
Exactly, right? And it's the same for if you're trying to like create a supportive environment in your school. It has to start from the top. But I feel like once the staff have your back, it's half the battle.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And there was a little bit of me that was kind of like, am I kind of the show trick pony, like, you know, the show pony? Because like the lads would be like, oh my God, like, you know, like some of the lads that you would work with that come from a gay background, some of them were from the country that are moving, they've never seen a gay person before. And like, they were, yeah, like, most of them were like, so intrigued by it. Like, they're like, really, like, you know, like, this is mad to them.
But and again, I love hearing that because I think we're moving towards a climate of not being able to ask someone who's different to you a question, yeah, and go, tell me, yeah, about that.
Yeah.
But people are fearful to, yeah, go, oh, I'll say the wrong thing.
Yeah, no, totally. Like this fella, I remember in particular, he said to me one day, he was like, it's so mad. Like, I'd love my girlfriend would just sit down and play PlayStation with me. Like, and I was like, what? And he was like, well, like, if you have a boyfriend, like, you're just going to play PlayStation all day. I was like, I don't even own a PlayStation. But like, yeah, if that's what you think it is, like, totally fine. You know what I mean? Like, he was like, it's actually like a good thing, actually. You know what I mean?
This, yeah, is
what,
yeah, he's going, yeah, on, yeah,
about. But like that anyway, really supportive environments, working in an educate together school now, and it's like a different ball game altogether, you know, okay, what I mean? Like, we pride ourselves on inclusion. It's, you know, it's deep into the curriculum. It's a very supportive environment, you know, it's very encouraging environment for the staff, but also for the parents and also for the students. You would have a lot of children that come from same-sex couples because they feel, mm-hmm, like their children can go there and that they're a valued member of the school community and they don't have to be secretive or they don't have to, you know, it's not a lie, they're not living a lie, you know, because they're part of the community. So Educate Together, I think, is like is really good when it comes to those kind of things. Do you, mm-hmm, know, like, we celebrated Pride Month in the first June that I was in the school. We celebrated Pride, we went all out and we did a huge parade, and News Today and RTE came and filmed it and the whole school got behind it, and it was such an amazing day, to the point where that was years ago now, and I still get kids who were in junior infants at the time who'd be like, I don't know, in fourth or fifth class now, saying, oh my God, do you remember that? Like, that was amazing. Or, you know, parents who reference it from time to time. And like, even, you know, like, there's pictures on the walls and people always refer back to it. And we mark it every year, but this year in particular was big. It was just after COVID and we needed to pick me up. You know what I mean? Yeah. And everything had to be done outside. So we had this big celebration outside and it was lovely. But I'll never forget, they posted it online and the hate we got was horrendous. And as someone who had just gotten a job in this school, I felt partly responsible because I was pushing it. It was staff meeting one day, they're like, who wants to take over Pride? Who wants to lead Pride events? And there was a silence.
You do a reveal into a Pride outfit.
I snatched the wig.
I suppose I,
yeah,
can.
Yeah. I there was a silence. And then like one of the girls looked at me and I goes, I suppose that's for me, is it? And everyone was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, no problem. I'll do it. But I felt partly responsible when we were getting comments and on Twitter and on YouTube of, you know, that all the staff were paedophiles and perverts and this, that and the other. And I was like, this is wild. And I was sick going into work that week. It was the last week before the summer holidays. And I was like, oh my God, what am I after doing? You know? And I said it to my boss and I was like, look, I don't know if you've seen the comments. And she's like, yeah, I have. And I was like, I'm so sorry. And she's like, for what? Like, that's ridiculous. And yeah, then the whole staff were like, "That it's like, you have to laugh at these things. These people are completely like, you, yeah, know what I mean? They have no idea. Like, look at the smiles on those kids' faces. Like, they had the best day. Some of them probably didn't even know what they were celebrating, but we got to dress up in colour, yes, and dance and have fun. And it was amazing.
And celebrate, exactly, all different types,
exactly,
of people.
Exactly. And like, I mean, like, we're 3 months away, 4 months away from Pride now, and we're already planning what, yeah, we're going to do this month now, you know?
Thanks for sharing that, because I think sometimes we can lean into, it's amazing, this is happening in the school, it's great. And unfortunately, and I'm not going to share the story, but a friend of mine had an unfortunate situation where words like paedophile and similar words were thrown around by a parent in a school environment. And that shook me when, mm, I was told that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this is still going on. What do you think needs to happen within school environments? When I was thinking about this coming to chat with you, I was thinking it's got to be student, staff, parents. It's got to be everyone involved.
Absolutely.
As someone who is a teacher in the education system, what do you think needs or can be done to kind, yeah, of challenge these outrageous, like, opinions and outrageous language?
Do you know what? One thing that I always try and let people know is, if you're teaching a young class, right, particularly junior infants, and you've three kids, mm-hmm, in a classroom or however many, right, the only thing that children see is someone to play with. That's all they see. So when they look across the table or they see someone in the classroom, they're not looking at the colour of their skin. They're not looking at what form of family they come from. They're not looking about they're not asking about their race or religion. They're not wondering, you know, what their parents' sexuality is. Mm-hmm. They're wondering, will they play with me? That's it. So everything that comes after that is learned. So we need to be very careful. They're sponges. Kids are sponges on what they pick up. And we see table talk all of the time. Mm. You know, all of the time. So I think we have a responsibility in our homes, first of all, not to shelter children at all, not to block them, not to hide them, not to hide like gay families from them. They need to see that these things happen in life. Yeah. You know what I mean? Not to shelter them from reality. In our schools as well, like, it's very important, as we said, it has to come from the top. I, as I said, have been very fortunate to only work in really supportive environments, probably because I've been very selective about where I would apply to work, because I want to make sure that when I am working, I'm going to be working somewhere where I am going to be supported, you know?
But do you have any take on what can be done to the schools that maybe you would lean away from? Like, if you were to have a chat with people who are in schools that you maybe don't align with, would you have any kind of, as a queer teacher, would you have anything to say to them to be like, this could help?
I mean, it's so difficult, because I think one of the best things that you can do for your school and for the children that you're teaching is be unapologetically you, you know? And I am out, and the kids know that I'm out, you know? And I am, for some of those kids, the only representation that they have. So it'd be very easy for me to say, you know, be yourself in the school that you're in, but I know that's not always the case.
Yeah.
But there's no harm in challenging things, you know? Asking, why aren't we doing this? You know? Speak, like, Shout Out, for example, they have incredible resources for schools, particularly secondary schools, but it drips down into primary schools as well. The INTO do loads on same families. The resources are there. Reach out and see, you know, ask for help. You know, see confidence in a member of staff if there's someone that you can speak to. If not, is there someone that you know who's in a similar position, or a teacher somewhere else? What do you guys do? There's help there. And if you find yourself in a position where you're in a school where you're dreadfully unhappy because they're not supporting you, well, then maybe you need to reassess whether you need to be there or not. I'm not saying leave there, but I am saying, you know, you have a responsibility as well at the same time to stand up to these things. Do you know?
Communication.
Yeah. I mean, I would find it very hard to believe if there was, you know, a staff in the country that weren't supportive of it. I know it does exist, but like that, it can be parents that can be the challenge, you know?
Yeah.
But you just make sure that you're supported in wherever you are. You know what I mean? And that's the first thing that you can do, and you can take little steps then.
And I think it goes back to then the conversation we had earlier, where it's like, just meet the parent where they're at and go, How can we discuss this? Let's, and maybe even having someone from the top, like the principal, in the room, if any unfortunate words are thrown around.
Without a doubt. Like, I mean, like, that would be an ideal situation, but I can understand why you wouldn't want to meet these people face to face. But you have rights as a human being. Remember that at the end of the day. You know what I mean? And there are supports there for you. You know, reach out. If you're part of a union, reach out to those. You know, speak to your principal. They're there to support you. If you're not the best version of yourself, well, then you're not doing the best version of your job. You know, and that's what you need to be doing as a teacher.
I literally, my mind is like, and let's discuss this and this and this. But I want to jump onto Queeriosity.
Yes.
Where do we start? Tell us how Queeriosity came about. First of all, it's a radio show highlighting queer culture, community, connection.
That's totally it, right? So basically, Queeriosity, it's on every Saturday on Dublin City FM at 12 p.m. And we also stream it afterwards straight away, right? I make sure that it's set for like 11:30, so it's up for one.
So you're doing the behind the scenes?
Yeah, we do most of the stuff ourselves.
Okay.
Yeah, we do most of it. Like myself. Amazing. So it's myself and James O'Hagan. And the way it came up is I have my own podcast, and then
The voice note. Available on all reputable platforms.
Make sure you listen and leave a good 5-star review. But I always wanted to get into radio. That's what I wanted to do, right? And I did a radio course and I was adamant that I wasn't going to let what I learned slip. So like editing and that kind of thing. So I was like, I'll set up the podcast. Perfect, you know? Yeah. And I love doing it now. But I always have been trying to get myself into radio. And last summer I started volunteering in Dublin City FM and almost instantly... Megan, who works inside there, was like, there might be an opportunity for a show. I'd like to put your name forward for it. And I was like, oh yeah, no bother. I hear this all the time. Go on, no bother.
Okay.
And then suddenly it got wheels and it started snowballing. And the next thing I know, she's like, do you know James O'Hagan? I was like, I know him, like, we kind of know each other. And she was like, James works for LGBT Ireland. They want to do this new show. It's going to be, you know, LGBTQIA focused. Would you be interested? And I'm like, that's my thing. Absolutely.
Already sitting in the chair.
Absolutely there. So we did a pilot in end of September, start of October. And when I tell you now, it was brutal. James will tell you. It was brutal. But it was the perfect thing that we could have done because we came back from, we were like, all right, this is what we need to change. This is what we need to change. That can stay. This needs to go. We both come from podcasting backgrounds. We were just talking back and forth the whole time. And that's not radio, you know? So we added in bits. We took things out. And that's where it started, basically. So we've been at it now since October. Yeah. Every week. And it's a ball. It's a ball. And you know what I love about it is, like, I would have said, like, you know, I am active in the community. I don't mind speaking up.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've learned from it, from the people I've met, first of all, has been insane. Because every week there's a different issue or there's a different topic or there's a new person in for an interview. But also, it's me and James O'Hagan. And like, we get on really well, but we're different people.
Very different.
Totally different people.
I think that's so important in a show like that to highlight two different queer identities.
And it works, you know, like James is way older than me. He's not. He's slightly older than me. We're at
calm down. I'm not far behind James.
No, but we're at different stages. Like, James has just bought a house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? James has been out for years. He's really active in the community. You know, he works for LGBT Ireland.
A wonderful voice for the community.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And from sitting and just chatting to him, he probably doesn't know it. I'd never give him the credit. But I've learned so much from him as well.
Yeah.
Like, he's so wise and he's like meticulous in his way of thinking. Like,
a pro behind the mic.
He is.
He really is.
He is. But also, like, he's very clever about what he chooses to speak about. And like, I would just jump down and say, let's do this interview or let's do that interview. And he's like, I don't want to do that because of this. And I'm like, I didn't even think that would be an issue. You know what I mean? So it works really well.
Yeah.
Works really well. And like, it's been, first of all, selfishly, was probably because I wanted to get into radio. But what I've learned from that has been incredible. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, about the community, about different people, about the issues that actually really matter. Also supports that are there.
Yeah.
That you might even be aware of. And since then, you know, something might come up and I might say, oh, I actually had someone on the radio about that. Try this or go here, you know, in conversations that I have in real life. So it's been incredibly worthwhile. So fulfilling.
That's amazing. And it's an amazing show. And I love listening to it for that exact reason of staying tuned in to the community and the issues. Because I think sometimes you can go into your little bubble and you can forget that there's all these issues within the community that are still going on.
That acronym stretches so far. You know what I mean? There's so, like, you know what I mean? Like I see life as, you know, a gay man. And I suppose up until very recently, I didn't see the issues that were affecting our trans community, our non-binary community, our bisexual community, our lesbian community. So, like, it was just, like, it's just so eye-opening, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really educational, actually. Do you know what I mean? Is the way I would put it for me. And I hope that that's what people get from it too. And it's funny because we didn't want to focus it on just Dublin because we're like that's closing us off and it's closing off most of the community in the country.
And it's such a typical Dublin thing to do.
Typical. And as a Cork man, I would never have
it. You are having none of it.
Absolutely
good,
not.
Good.
I like charge up my Cork accent before I go in there. I'm like, I'm not going to forget. Like, it nearly galls me to say Dublin City FM. I'm only joking. But like, what we're trying to do as best as we can is, you know, is to reach out to organisations around the country. So we have had, you know, very recently, you know, that there was the SAG in Cork when the only gay bar, Chambers, closed down unexpectedly. And we covered it. And then we covered the new bar opening, Vibe, which just opened a couple of weeks ago. We've spoken to the Midlands LGBT project about all the events that they're running. You know, we're trying our best to cast the net outside and reach out to as many people, so that if you're, you know, a member of the community in Roscommon, something might resonate with you. You know, that kind of way. So that's what we're trying to do as best as we can. And very fortunately, there has been some stations outside of Dublin City FM pick up the show and play it as well.
Right.
So it's starting to spread a little bit.
I think it's important for you to say, earlier on you said there's resources out there. I think Curiosity is one of those resources.
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
If you're kind of, you know, in a community that you don't feel there's a lot of LGBTQ plus representation, this is something you can go, well, let me see if there's something close by.
And beyond that, like, you know, we do record once a week and it goes out once a week, but we like to think that we're always available, and that's something that we're trying to encourage. We want to build a community. We want to build a community of listeners that want to get involved, who want to contribute to the show. Like, you don't have to be moving mountains to be part of Curiosity. And
slip into the DMs.
Slip into the DMs. If you're struggling, slip into the DMs. I'm not going to say that I'm going to be able to help you or James, but we can point you in the right direction for certain.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Padraic, you are amazing.
Thank you very much.
Tell us your socials, where we can get the voice note, where we can get Curiosity socials. Yeah. Give us all the information.
I'll give you everything. So Curiosity is on every Saturday, as I said, 12 p.m. Dublin City FM, and wherever you get your podcasts afterwards. I have my own podcast, The Voice Note. That's also wherever you get your podcasts. And you can reach me on my socials, Instagram mainly, but also TikTok and X now. And my handle for everything is Padraic_WMC.
Padraic, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
No problem.